Dozens of hospitals across the state this week held events to recognize the need for more people to be organ donors. April is Donate Life Month. Wisconsin has one of the highest organ donor populations in the nation. Last year, more than 700 people received an organ transplant in Wisconsin. We're talking about the process, working through your questions, and hearing your donation stories on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Barna is a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. Seth, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Kate. I appreciate the time that you guys allow us to talk about such an important topic.
Well, each year in April, you see a spike in organ donation interest and commitment in the process. How important is this month in the overall effort to get people signed up to become organ donors?
It is very impactful for us to actually set aside an entire month to actually act towards the promotion of organ donation. This is very, very important for us, and it is something that we look forward to all year long and really hope that people will see all the promotional things going on and at least have some interest in the process and at least spark some interest in signing up to be a registered donor.
And this year, Wisconsin really ramped up this effort in April by starting out April 2nd with a ceremony at so many hospitals around the state.
Yes, I'm in awe still of all the participation in this event that we had on Monday. It was called Pause for Life. It was really a time for us to focus on what was important and the people that have been willing to give organ donations to save someone's life, or also to promote the fact that anyone can help to be an organ donor. You can sign up and be a registered donor, and it really doesn't take a whole lot to show your support for the whole process. But the Pause for Life event was so impactful. I was so impressed with all of the media coverage that we received, and throughout the state of Wisconsin, all of the Facebook posts that were out there and just people that were participating from every aspect of Wisconsin and in area. It was just tremendous, and I can't express enough how impressed I was with the total effort put out for that event.
Seth, can you make the case for us how we should go about signing up to become an organ donor, why we should do it?
Well, to sign up to be an organ donor is, like I said, a pretty simple process. There's a couple different ways to do it. One, and the most easy probably, is the fact that you can just go online and go and register, donatelifewisconsin.org. You can hit the link to sign up there, or you can also have your orange dot on your driver's license in the state of Wisconsin. It is now, because some legislation was changed since the year 2010, it is now a first-person consent saying that you want to and give your consent to be an organ donor if you have that orange dot on your driver's license in the state of Wisconsin.
Can you speak to the impact that a single organ donation can have?
Well, the impact of one organ donor really is unbelievable. The when we're talking just the main organs, the one single donor can save up to 8 lives, and that is just through the main organs that are able to be donated. There's also the tissue, eye, bone, skin donation that can happen from a single donor, and you can impact. There's stories of over 80 different people being impacted from just one donor.
What kind of need is there for organ donors in Wisconsin?
Well, it's amazing that despite the fact that we have 60% of our population in the state of Wisconsin signed up to be a organ donor, we still have a need of just over 2,000 people currently waiting as of January on a waiting list here in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, the fact that we still have that many people just shows that we need to put forth a lot of effort to get this very important topic promoted some more.
Seth Barna is a registered nurse, and he's the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. We're talking about organ donation and tissue donation. You can have your questions answered. You can tell your stories at 800-642-1234. Have you been the recipient of an organ donation? What did you feel when you found out you were going to get a transplant? How long has it been? How did you think? What do you think about that time now? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Seth, how does Wisconsin stack up nationally across the country with the amount of people waiting for an organ, the involvement in organ donation?
Well, I can tell you that the fact is that we are one of the highest registered states in the United States, that with over 60% of people registered to be a donor, that we do rank in the top. And we also, we have 2,000 people waiting for a gift here in the state of Wisconsin, but nationally there's over 114,000 people that are waiting. So we do have a need here in Wisconsin, but obviously there is a national and greater need out there. We had the, along with our Pause for Life on Monday, the flag-raising ceremony, we had a moment of silence to go along with that flag-raising, and that was done for 1 minute and 14 seconds. And that was the importance of that number, was the fact that there are over 114,000 people waiting nationally for an organ donation.
What are some of the more common organ transplants that are done in hospitals every day?
So when we talk about organ donation and then tissue, bone, skin, eye, those are talked about often as kind of two separate events, but obviously they're as important. And the main eight organs that can be donated are the heart, the two lungs, two kidneys, liver, pancreas, and small bowel. And those are the ones that are the most, those are the eight organs that we talk about when we're referred to when we talk about organ donation. The fact that, the kidney and liver are probably the two that are most commonly done, but obviously everything is equally as important if you're that person waiting for that gift.
And what causes a waiting list? Why aren't these organs readily available so a transplant can go ahead?
Well, that's an interesting. It's interesting the fact that we hear so much and see so much about organ donation on media and such, but the real fact is that only 2 to 3% of the people that pass away actually do it in a way that makes them eligible to be an organ donor. So it's such a rare event to be somebody that could be possibly available to donate organs. And then we also have that issue when we have 2 to 3% of the people that are eligible. It's really important to have the facts and all of the details set up ahead of time so that your family at that time of grief does not have to make that major decision for you to be an organ donor. A lot of times people feel grief, and at that time it's one of the most difficult events that anyone could possibly imagine when you have a tragic event that would possibly let someone be an organ donor. But families are very torn and oftentimes have a very difficult time making that decision. That's where it's so important to sign up to be a registered donor, talk to your family about that decision, and then make sure that your family is aware if that changes in any way, or make sure you have that conversation with them to make so they know how important it really is to you.
Seth, what makes a body eligible for organ donation?
So organ donation can only happen after someone is pronounced as being expired. So when we have a patient who is pronounced, that's when organ donation can start happening, or the discussion can start happening with the family. So we need to have someone who is pronounced most of the time in this situation for for the organ donation brain death is the declaration that we have to test for and then go ahead from there. So brain death is actually the one way to be an organ donor, and that, you know, is not often found in the population. Like I said, 2-3% of the people that pass away only are eligible and do it in a way that makes them able to be a donor.
A new statewide observance was held this week by dozens of hospitals across the state that are connected to Donate Life Wisconsin. Marks the start of Donate Life Month, an effort to increase donation of organs, eyes, tissues. We're discussing the transplant process, what's involved in organ donation, with Seth Barna. He is a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. You can join in with your questions and donation stories, 800-642-1234. Have you been the recipient of an organ donation? What was your experience like? How did it turn out? Or perhaps you've received a living donation, a kidney or a liver, for example. Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation right after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Dozens of ceremonies were held Monday at hospitals in Wisconsin to recognize the need for organ and tissue donation. They all started at 10:08 to signify that one donor can save 8 lives. By the numbers, there were 35,000 transplant operations in the U.S. last year. That's a record number. Despite that, more than 114,000 people across the country are waiting for a transplant. We're talking through the process, hearing your life-saving donation stories here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Barna stays with us. He's a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. You can join in with questions and your donation stories at 800-642-1234. Donors, would you do it again if you had to? Would you encourage others to consider becoming donors? What did you learn by being a donor? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Judy joining us from Whitehall. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you? And hi, Seth. It's glad to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good morning, Judy.
Yeah, I called because my husband had a transplant back in September 1975. He had a kidney transplant from his brother. He is now 81 and his brother is 88. And I think the big problem, or whatever we have to talk about, is please talk to your family. And you can be a live donor. You can be alive and donate part of your liver, part of your kidney, or one kidney. And just talk to your family. It's so important.
Judy, how did that change your husband's life? Because 1975, that was more than 40 years ago.
43 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't expect him to live to see his children graduate. He had children then at 15 and 13 and 12. And now he has lived to see his grandchildren graduate. So that we were very amazed. But he didn't get there alone. But it takes a family and a village to raise the children, and it takes a family to survive a transplant. But
so,
please talk to your family.
Judy, once the transplant was over, what were the medical follow-up over the decades?
Medicine, and rejection. The first 5 years, they watch real close for rejection, and after that, it's once every year, and after 10 years, it's you're lucky. And they said if you can live 1 year, you can live five. If you can live five, you can live 20. Well, now we know it's been 43 years for Ardell.
Well, Judy, thank you so much for calling in with your story. We appreciate it. Seth Barna, can you talk us through living donations a little bit more and how families can help each other, other family members?
Yes, Judy, thank you so much for calling in. That's a very inspirational story, and I appreciate it so much to hear from you. The other part of that is that, you know, there's a lot of follow-up after the actual transplant, but it does not even come close to all of the things that are going on prior to the transplant. I'm sure that if he was in need of a kidney transplant, there may have been some type of dialysis going on before that, and that's a daily or at least a multi-day, multi-time per week event, and it does occupy a lot of time that the people are not able to spend with their families and be a parent and be a spouse. So that is one of the most inspirational stories in that whole living donor aspect. And yes, that is one part of it that we haven't mentioned yet this morning. And living donors are, you know, obviously one of those things that it's not going to work for everyone. But when you do have a match and you have someone that's willing to do that, it is a very good way to share the gift of life with someone else. And kidney is usually the one that we hear the most often about with living donors. But it, like Judy said, it is also possible to do that with part of a liver and pancreas and intestine. So it is something that's possible.
But what are the risks with living donation?
Well, there are obviously risks with any type of a surgery. That's a basic risk of infection and some of the things that can happen in just in a hospital. But the benefits obviously outweigh those risks. Otherwise, we wouldn't be performing any of these operations every day. So the risk part of it, obviously the most impactful thing can be, well, what happens if I give up one of my kidneys and then do have the other one fail? And that is possible. That happens. But hopefully in the fact that you were able and willing to be a living donor, most of the time there are exceptions made for that person being on a list in the fact that if they only have one kidney and they donated the other one, oftentimes they'll do everything they can to move that person ahead on the list so that they can sustain that life with another kidney donation.
So let's say you want to volunteer to donate a kidney to somebody who needs one, perhaps a family member. What kind of process is that like? The hospital stay, the procedure, the recovery? Take us through it.
Well, I can tell you, unfortunately, the fact that our hospital does not perform the transplants makes me a little bit limited on that side of it. But I can tell you that it is something that can be, yes, it can take time out of your schedule, obviously, and put some impact on that person who's donating. But from what I've been told and some of the people that I've talked to that have done this, it is so much less of an impact than what we really think. The recovery is much faster than what I have ever expected. And the stories that I've heard really do make it worthwhile to go through such an effort.
We've had a couple questions about religion and organ donation. What role does faith have in these decisions?
Well, I think for every individual, faith is one of those driving factors in all of our lives, no matter what that faith is. And the fact about organ donation religion is that each denomination in Wisconsin or in the nation does have their stand on what how they feel about organ donation. And most of them actually do feel that that is one of the last tributes to someone that you can make to help others. So that is usually something that's seen as a positive event for most denominations and religions that we deal with. And it is something that really does impact some of the areas in Wisconsin, because there are some ethnic groups that do not and will not accept organ donation as an option. So we do have to work on education and really make sure that we treat each case as an individual and work with that person so that we can give them the facts and keep them informed about making that decision to be an organ donor and whether it's the right thing for them or not.
Seth Barna is with us. He's a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. You can join in with your stories, your transplant donation stories, your questions at 800-642-1234. What was the experience like and how did things turn out? Maybe your family member or close friend received a life-saving transplant. Did your loved one donate their organs and tissues? What was that conversation like? And what does it mean to you that someone can breathe or see because of that gift? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Seth, what are some of the misconceptions out there that you try to clear up about organ donation?
Well, that's a great and interesting part of my job and as the liaison for Gunderson Health Systems. It is all about educating people and getting the facts through to them that we really are doing this in the most respectful and the best and most up-to-date ways possible, that we are actually doing this so that people can benefit from the gifts of life from someone else, and it's not a financial benefit. We actually have, in my 18 years of critical care nursing, I've worked with many different families and patients in organ donation. And I've heard and seen a lot of different questions and things come up and reasons that people didn't want to be organ donors. And then just through the fact that I was able to sit down with them and educate them on what it really means to be an organ donor and what the whole process is, I've changed some of the views on that process itself. And a lot of times people ask things such as, well, I want to have an open casket for the patient at the funeral, and I know they think that that's not possible, but it definitely is a possibility. Organ tissue donation does not impact the patient in a way that doesn't allow them to be able to be viewed at a ceremony. This is one of the things that people are most concerned about. A lot of times other people ask about selling organs on the black market, and that obviously is something that's produced through the media. That is not something that is actually done through our donor network here, the system in which we operate through. And that is one of those things that we've had come up in conversation at the hospital. And like I said, my job is really based on educating and giving the information for people to make that most informed decision.
Let's bring in Kevin now with a question. Kevin's in Dodgeville. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What an excellent topic you have this morning. I would like to ask your specialist, your expert there, anytime something comes up concerning the medical field and medicine and healthcare these days, we are always concerned about cost. And my question is a technical question. Exactly what's happening with the insurance companies covering the cost of these transplants? Are they behind them? Are they not wanting to cover these transplants? And my next question is, have these drugs, these anti-rejection drugs, have they gotten less expensive, and have they gotten better? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Great question. Seth, go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes. Wow, so the fact that you bring up that question that really does go along with our conversation just prior to that, and the fact that that is one of the things that people cite for a reason not to be an organ donor, and it has to do with the cost. But the fact is that the cost of being an organ donor itself is covered by what the organ procurement organization that you are working with from the time that the patient is pronounced as being brain dead to the organ donation process itself. That cost is all covered by the organ procurement organization. And that is one of the things that we really do have to stress with families, because they do feel like, they want to know who is who is going to cover the costs of that that time that the patient actually is in the hospital before the process of donation. And as far as the question regarding the cost of the anti-rejection and all the medications, from the patients and the stories that I've heard and been told, the fact that, yes, the anti-rejection medications have changed a great deal, and that things have improved tremendously since, like, Judy's husband in 1975. So they have made an evolution with those, just like all the other processes in healthcare and medications and such have changed here since the beginning of this process. So the cost is one of those major issues that we do see. But like you said, the insurance companies are actually working towards helping people with this. And the fact that they do support, most often support the entire process of organ donation. So there are positive things that do come out of this, in the fact that or the insurance companies are able to work with us and work with the families for the transplant process.
And a follow-up to Kevin's question, what do we know about how insurance companies are handling the cost for living donors?
That's a good question. That would be one detail that it would have to be investigated per insurance company. I think the policies for those patients, there are different policies written in each policy that do affect that process. And I know going through some of the fine print on some of our insurance policy, health insurance that we've seen, there has been question, you know, people have said that, you know, I don't want to be a registered donor because my insurance company, you know, said XYZ. But I think there's really a good opportunity to look at some of those policies and really find out, you know, which ones and what the policies are for each individual company. Things I've seen different varying answers to that depending on what the policy or what the company is.
Let's bring in Susan now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling because my mother was very pro organ donation, and this was way back in the 90s. She died in 1998, and unfortunately, the only thing they were able to take were her corneas, but her corneas allowed somebody to see, and our family really was affected by that in a positive way, and we were very happy that something could live on because she died very suddenly at a very young age. And as a result, all three, we have four children in our family, and all of us are organ donors upon death.
Oh, that's a really wonderful story, Susan. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. Seth, what about cornea donation?
Well, Susan, thank you so much for calling and bringing that to our attention, because that is one of that really does play into one of the things that I tell people every day, is the fact that I get calls in my office and talk to people, and they ask me, you know, they say I'm such and such age old, you know, 90 years old, and I want to be an organ donor. Does it pay for me to even sign up? And, you know, you are proof to me that no matter how old you are or what the process is, yes, you should sign up. Because since I've started in the donation field, even 15 years ago, things have changed so much as far as age and restrictions. There are really I can't say there isn't any age restriction, but at this point, age is one of those things that is really looked at for each individual case when the death does occur. And so things happen, have changed, things have advanced, and so that we are able to use organs from people who are older than what we were able to formerly. So each individual is really looked at and analyzed at the time of the person's death, and from that analysis, they really do judge whether or not a patient can be an organ donor.
Seth Barna is with us, and news is coming up next. April is Donate Life Month, raising awareness and involvement in organ, eye, and tissue donation. Nearly 3 million Wisconsinites, almost 60% of eligible people, have registered as donors. Meanwhile, the UW Health performed 568 transplants last year. It's the most in the program's 51-year history. UW also says that it has the largest pancreas transplant program in the country, completing 57 pancreas transplants. Across the U.S., there were a record 35,000 transplant operations. We're talking about the journey, the stories, the wait. Here on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Barna is here. He's a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you waiting for an organ? What is your story? Have you recently received a transplant? How is life now? What questions do you have about donation? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in John now, joining us from Sauk City. Hi, John.
Good morning. I wanted to make two points. I donated a kidney to my brother about 15 years ago, and the surgery really was not difficult. It's done laparoscopically now, and I think I was out of the hospital 3 or 4 days after the surgery. The other point I wanted to make is that my brother's insurance covered all my expenses and all his expenses, except for my wages when I was not at work. And I was very fortunate to work for a good company at the time, and they took care of my wages. So it was really a fairly easy experience and very satisfying that my brother is still healthy today, and so am I, and he didn't have to go through a lot of dialysis, and it really worked out well.
Well, sounds like a very seamless process. John, thank you so much for calling in with your story. And Seth, he's describing a laparoscopic surgery for that kidney, so a very minute incision.
Yes. Thanks, John, for calling in. That's a great story to hear, the fact that this does happen without a whole lot of discomfort and pain, and that you were able to be out of the hospital in a relatively short period of time. The laparoscopic procedures have changed so much in surgery itself has changed so much in the last 15 to 20 years, but the fact that we are able to use laparoscopic procedures for some of these procedures, and now we have the robotic surgeries and all of this stuff, yes, they do have a very small incision. They're able to do less invasive maneuvering in making those incisions, and then also if that increases, decreases the recovery time for those patients.
John, thanks. Let's go to Madeline now, joining us from De Pere. Madeline, hi.
Hi. I think that this should be also a show on halting kidney failure. And I've known several people who were able to do that. Everybody I know who go on Kidney Coach, when they've told that their kidneys are failing, they were able to halt their kidney failure. And but the doctors, even the specialists, they don't tell the people, and they don't seem to want to know how you can halt your kidney failure. But all you got to do is go on Kidney Coach and do what it says.
So Madeline is
your kidney failure.
Right, Madeline's saying that there are workarounds so you don't need a kidney transplant. Seth, go ahead.
Well, I'm sure there are some situations in that are able to be helped or at least paused for a time being with certain dietary restrictions and or other things, but of course we would like to really examine any of the non-operative and other things that are available to help with kidney failure. But there are also some situations that have little to do with the fact that people are their diet or their factors that they're contributing. Some of them are just hereditary issues, such as a tendency for a family to be prone to some types of disease, one of them being a polycystic kidney disease, which really does not have much effect from our diet or what we do. It's just a genetic issue. So some of those things, and yes, it is worth exploring any options that can help a patient. And really, I don't think you'll find any physician that wouldn't be encouraging to a patient to help their own cause by making changes. But oftentimes, things do not we don't have the option for that, such as other kidney injuries or things that really don't have anything to do with any external cause that we are doing ourselves.
Seth, here in 2018, are transplants becoming less of an option of last resort to more of a first option, perhaps?
I would have to say that if you asked anyone who is out there today waiting on the list, that they have actually explored every possible option that they could explore, and things that they've looked into are probably things that we've never, you know, some of those things that I've never even heard of. So I would venture to guess that from the stories that I've been told and the people I've talked to, they would say that this is their last resort in the fact that they've explored any other option that was ever possible.
Seth Barna, we talk a lot about the major organs with transplants and the 8 organs that you went over, but less or so other donations, like such as skin grafts. Can you talk about some of the more lesser known donations that aren't so high profile, like kidneys?
Sure. The fact that we talk the most about organ donation, you're right, that is the thing that we really focus on. But it is also important to say that tissue, bone, skin donation is a great need as well, and that it does have a special set of circumstances that are not as restrictive as the actual organ donation process. Anyone that really, there is no eligibility to be the way you pass away or the way that you present in a hospital doesn't have as much an effect on the tissue donation process and eye donation process as it does on organs. So people that even have been that pass away at home are still actually able to donate tissue and bone and eyes as well. So there's a little bit less of a time restraint on that, and that is something that people, you know, are more often able to donate.
Let's bring in Gail now, joining us from Pulaski. Hi, Gail.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I was just calling in because I wanted to share the story of my son, Ethan. Ethan was diagnosed with a rare liver disease when he was born, and our nephew stepped up and found out that he would be a match for a liver transplant for our son, Ethan. And so Ethan had his life-saving liver transplant at the age of 11 months old. Ethan is now 8 years old. He's a third grader. He's happy. He loves soccer. You know, sassy young man now, but he wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for our nephew, who was his living donor. And it's because of Ethan that we started a Northeast Wisconsin Donate Life Walk with the Bayview Student Council. And it's actually being held next Saturday at Bayview Middle School. And our goal really is to raise awareness and have people start that discussion with their families to say yes to organ donation and have that discussion before a dire situation comes about.
Wow, Gail, thank you so much for bringing your story, and just it's very inspirational. Seth, go ahead.
Yes, yes, thank you so much for calling, Gail. That it was obviously a very touching story. In fact, that I'd like to know a little bit more about what's that relationship like between Ethan and his actual living donor.
You know what? It's a very special bond. Adam checks in on Ethan all the time just to see how he's doing. I think it's a special bond to know that a part of you is in someone else, And it's because of you that, you know, our little boy is alive. And I think for Adam, because he was a young man when he did this and didn't have children, but now he has children. And I think he realizes just how precious our children are to us.
Seth, if people want more information about organ donation, where do you refer them? Where do you direct them?
Well, obviously, the internet and the medical or the media that we have today and medical information that's found on the internet. You know, some of those sites you have to take with a grain of salt, but there are some that we do refer patients to as far as the information that people are seeking. And the DonateLifeWisconsin.org, that's one of those sites that you can find educational materials there. You can register to be an organ donor. There's a lot of links to different places. And also, just as an organization that performs a lot of high-level transplants, the UW organ and tissue donation website is also a great place to find a lot of resources. Gunderson, most institutions probably have their own, and we do at Gunderson have our own website that does have information on it for organ donation, and also has a link that would connect you directly to where you need to go for registry or to register to be an organ donor.
And you can look at your own license to see exactly your status?
In the state of Wisconsin, if you have that orange dot on your driver's license since the legislation changed in 2010, you are considered to be an actual first-person consent, which means you've already given your consent. It's a legal contract, basically, that says, yes, I will be an organ donor upon my death in an eligible way. So the actual process is so much easier when people have decided for themselves and made that decision for themselves and then also had that conversation with their loved ones. That's the part that really really is the icing on the cake, when you've communicated that with everyone that would be involved in your process. That's really makes it so much easier for them and then also for the process to happen. Well, people are usually a lot more encouraging and on board and positive with that experience when they know that that's something that the patient wanted.
Well, Seth Barna, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about such an important topic today.
Seth Barna is a registered nurse and the organ and tissue donation liaison at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina, Keely Baltina, Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.